Yes, of course, you can send us a WhatsApp at 2534679 if you're out in Barbados, is 1246. And of course, you can call us 4341790. Drop us an email at cricketmace@yahoo.com. We certainly want you to participate in the show. We want to welcome our listeners, of course, in Dominica, there on Vibes. We want to say hello to our listeners on WeFM there in Grenada. We also want to say hello to our very good friends at The Wave and WVent there, of course, in St. Lucia, ABS in Antigua, and of course, our friends at KLS Radio and across the Caribbean taking the broadcast live. Now, we are going to go, we're going to stay in Jamaica and talk to the noted journalist Orville Higgins. Hello, Orville, how are you? Orville?
How are you? All right, sir. I'm
pretty good indeed. Now, talk to me about Jamaica in terms of the test match. The tickets are going hotcakes up there in Jamaica.
Second test match of Bangladesh has been rather low key. Most of the Jamaican public are talking and viewing World Cup football. It is all the craze, right?
Orville, are you still with us? Okay, we're going to try to see if we get him back. There's a bit of a problem there. I don't know if he's close to a landline or something, but of course our technical man would try and sort it out for us. But he was making the point, of course, that every people are talking football, of course. And by the way, your side Belgium lost, Pearson. I know you're a big supporter of Belgium. What happened?
I'm a Brazil fan.
Really? I thought
the Belgian bandwagon.
No. Let me just explain.
Yes, please.
The last 12 years, I've said that the European team that I support is Belgium.
But you're Brazilian.
Yeah, Belgium has a lot of quality. Anyway, as you look, I just want to try emphasize this point, right? Because we have a way in the Caribbean in terms of our communication. We hear, but we don't listen.
Okay, fine.
I watched clips of the game in the first test against Bangladesh, and I didn't see any devilish deliveries. But I know someone was probably calling and said that I probably said the pitch was helpful to top boarders. I was looking at the overall context of the type of pitches that we were having this season, and just looking at it, I was thinking when I saw Roach bowling that morning, I was looking at Philander bowling to us. You know, that image was in my head, and Dale Steyn bowling to us, that kind of thing. I'm thinking of the old Kensington pitch,
right,
which was give you just as much carry and bounce,
right,
but you didn't have the juice, you know.
Person's a very good point you're making. Yeah. Very good point you're making. I'll certainly offer my comments on that. I think we got Orville Higgins back in the line. Let's hope the line is good now that we can talk to our friend in Jamaica. Hello, Orville. Orville? Where are you, Orville? Are you somewhere in Shalonie? We're not hearing you well at all.
He's reviewing a football game from today. No doubt.
Orville?
No, I'm in Kingston.
Okay. And
I'm not hearing you well at all.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Are you hearing me better now, Orville?
Yeah, but there's a slight delay. I'm hoping that it will be affecting you hearing me.
No. It is not affecting me at all. Let's hope we can get this through. I won't keep you too much longer. But of course, we want to hear from you what's happening in Jamaica. Is there a buzz at all about the test match?
No, as I was saying, most of the Jamaican public, certainly most of the people who I've been talking and I have quite a large following, if I may say so myself, it's really a work of football. Most people, for example, who are looking at the game for them between Belgium and France, and most people are talking about England and Croatia against the Bali. It's going to be the work of Canada. I don't expect that you'll see too many people at Savannah Park either. The build up to the test series has been rather low key with most of these sports-minded people on World Cup football rather than test match.
Oh, so you don't expect too many to go to Sabine on Thursday?
Well, Thursday is a non-World Cup day because, as I said, the final is on Sunday. So
right.
You could get a few wins. West Indies and League, this series 1-0. And between the Sudanga series and this series, we've been playing good cricket in patches. So I expect the faithful to come out. But on Sunday, I don't expect to see a full Savannah Park.
That's if the game goes on to Sunday.
True. And Orville, I understand that the pitch at Sabina Park has got lots of grass on it. Orville? All right. Seems as if we're having a bit of a problem with Orville. I suppose we have to try and Okay. Orville, are you still with us? All right. Okay.
Andrew, you have traveled through the Caribbean over the years doing commentary. And I'm sure the two pitches in the Caribbean that people look forward to are West Indies with their four-point attack and potent attack playing on where they were. It was Kensington and Sabina Park. There was hardly any grass that you saw on the grass would probably be embedded within the soil to bind the soil.
Mm-hmm.
But that top layer of grass that you were seeing, you can visibly see it now on these pitches.
It's live.
You know, but you never used to see that. But the Kensington over pitch had all the bounce to carrying the evenness in the world that you could expect.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't see, you evidently from the stands, you couldn't look and see the grass. Yeah, grass was there because you needed the grass, the creator needed the grass to bind the soil together. But I have seen pitches in the Caribbean, a heavy layer of grass, you know? And
I think it's a good thing. I mean, we've seen that in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
I think we've caught up. I have to give kudos to Cricket West Indies for taking a deliberate initiative to make sure the surfaces this season are faster surfaces. If we want to encourage people to bowl fast, then we need the appropriate surface.
And then when we go overseas, we meet some of those conditions. But you see, remember Andrew's friend, Adrian Smiley-Bailey, for 2 weeks was saying that also they look at your situation in a series and then who you're playing against and the attacks that they have, and you determine too the type of pitch that you will.
I think he'd be happy with this pitch.
You'll be the type of pitch you will produce.
Grassy pitch this time, though.
Yeah, because we're leading 1-0.
But I remember we were calling for after the PCL for sure. We were saying we needed some grassy and faster pitches.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but in fact, what I'm showing you here, Nikki, you look quite surprised. That's what's at Sabina Park. I have it here. Someone sent it to me. It's almost like the Bank Hall lawn at Empire Club in Barbados. I mean, it's got lots of grass. I'm going to show it to Larry Mears. That's what Sabina Park is looking like. Lots.
I think that's overdoing it a little bit there. But
I made a comment in Trinidad, and you know, people got a little bit upset with me because I think there's a bias towards the bowlers in relation to the pitches that we produced so far. I mean, whether that is a good thing or not is another matter. But from the pictures that I've seen in the Caribbean, I think that the bias, in my view, is with the bowlers. You agree with that, Pearson?
Yeah, I agree. Someone will probably say that the West Indies made over 400 runs.
Yeah.
But you would have seen that when you watch the Sri Lankan attack, it certainly looked very friendly.
Very,
very friendly. And if they had two good quality bowlers, right, it would have been a more competitive game. I agree.
But it was a spin that really gave the middle order, you know, that big shake-up that went through Chase and
because they don't have the armory to really utilize that surface, right?
Mm. All right, let's go back to Jamaica. Let's hope the line is better. We're going to try to speak to Nehemiah Perry, the former West Indies off spinner. Hello, Nehemiah, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. How is good old Jamaica, the land of wood and water?
Oh, down here, very, very hot.
Oh, very hot, huh? All right, indeed. Are you looking forward to the test match? I mean, on Thursday. I know that there's a buzz across the world in relation to football, but no doubt you are going to be going to Sabina Park to look at that second test, which starts on Thursday.
Oh, absolutely. You know, whatever cricket play at Sabina Park, I'm there. I'm a cricket lover, a cricket fan, and love cricket. So I used to play the game. I love cricket. So
yeah, of course, And of course, in terms of the pitch, you had a chance to see the Sabina Park pitch. Are you hearing me, Nehemiah? Okay. I don't know. I don't know if we're having a problem with delay or something. I don't know. I mean, but clearly there's a bit of a problem that we are experiencing here. We apologize to our listeners across the region. But is he still on the line? Or okay. Yeah, Nehemiah, are you hearing me? Hearing me now?
Yes,
all right. Okay, we're gonna try and solve that problem technically, you can also call us at 4341790, 4341790. That of course is the call number that you can call us and get involved in the discussion. But we were speaking about pitches, so you, Dr. Ford, you don't have any difficulty in relation to pitches being produced.
No, I'm happy with the change. We've had years of slow low pitches and our cricket hasn't progressed, and this is the way to have it, with pitches like this and with bowling camps for the fast bowlers, with batting camps for the batsmen, and also the specialist batsmen appreciating their deficiencies, especially after going to New Zealand and seeing what happened. You know, this would make us a more resilient side as the team matures and we tour some more. So I wanted to really get that experience.
Dr. Verda, I just think that you think that if South Africa came with Rabada and Steyn and Marco, you would be saying that you would...
Man, I believe that, you know, I know that those teams are ranked higher than us, and, you know, I could, you know, just from a cricketing standpoint, say, well, let's go with the slow and low and frustrate them with some attritional cricket so that we can be more competitive. But I think if we really want West Indies to have a chance of going to the top again, we have to be willing to expose ourselves to the best bowling there is on good, lively pitches, because that's what we get a steady diet of when we leave.
That pitch that I just saw, boy, that shocked me. I don't think I've ever seen so much grass.
Yeah, they'll cut it.
Yeah, cut it. 4341790, get involved in the discussion. You can certainly give us a call. Once again, we want to apologize. We have one or two technical issues, but we'll try and solve that.
We must give the West Indies team credit too for the effectiveness and the efficient job that they performed in the first test. The thing is that both teams had the opportunity to play on the pitch. Obviously, if you look at the Bangladeshi attack, they don't have that kind of attack where they would have been able to exploit the conditions, but that's not our fault. And we did bat well. I thought we buckled down and we had some partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
And as Dr. Ford is saying, it gives the young batters the opportunity to, have a situation on the wicket that, or pitch rather, which may be unfamiliar in the Caribbean, so that when they go abroad and they go to places like New Zealand and South Africa and England, they will not be apprehensive when they see grass on the pitch. But having said that, we need now to transpose those conditions onto the Caribbean first class season, so that the pitches now would mirror what you're getting in Test cricket. Because if we don't allow our young batsmen who are making the teams, the Guyana, Amazon, the Barbados, Trident, Steam, and so on, to have those conditions to bat on and to bowl on, then we would not reasonably expect that when they go to the next level, that test cricket, that they will be able to readily, you know, hit the straps and go running, because they would be playing in unfamiliar conditions, so to speak.
Okay. Well, we're talking about the pitches across the region. I think we need to speak to the man who is responsible, the creator Ken Crafton. I think he's up in Jamaica. Let's hope that we do not have any challenges technically. Hello, Ken. Good evening to you, Ken.
Hi, Andrew.
Okay, you sound loud and clear. Maybe it's because it's your St. Lucia phone.
Well,
because we've been having problems with the phones coming out, the cells coming out of Jamaica. So I think we solved the problem there, Larry, because he sounds loud and clear. You're in Jamaica, huh?
Okay. Yes, I am, and I'm also at Savannah Park right now.
Okay. Are you on the pitch now?
No, we just covered, but it's in good condition.
Tell us about the pitch, because I mean, I'm here. Somebody sent me a picture off the pitch at Sabine. It's got a lot of grass on it, Ken.
Yes, it has. In fact, it's the best I've ever seen a Sabine Park pitch. Real level, nice looking, and nice grass cover.
So how would y'all have been able to do that up at Sabine, get so much grass on the pitch?
Well, the hard work was done. I must say, Mr. Michael Hilton, who is the curator there, he has done a great job in doing those maintenance operations.
I see. So,
The grass was planted. It was top dressed. It was in a very good position to prepare the wheat right now.
So this grass was planted a long time ago?
Yeah, just about 2 months ago.
Oh, 2 months ago. So it takes about 2 months for the look like that, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I see.
Doing some gardening.
Right. And the grass didn't come from St. Lucia, did it?
No.
So what is your role up there? I know you've been traveling around the Caribbean. What are you doing up there in Jamaica?
Okay, well, I'm here, of course, to oversee the preparation of the wicket and get the outfield to some kind of look, which I've been able to do, working very closely with Michael Hilton, sharing ideas and ensuring that we stick to exactly where we need to be going.
So you're the boss then, Mr. Crafton?
I assist.
Indeed. Take us through these pitches. Or it is a refreshing to see a lot of grass, a lot of bumps. Let's start at the Queen's Park Oval when the West Indies played against Sri Lanka. I mean, what a turnaround. I mean, you used to get these low and slow pitches at the Queen's Park Oval. I was there for the test match. Lots of pace, lots of grass.
Yeah, well, it's a process we started a couple of years ago to really get our cricketers around the region to have grasp on the wicket, do the maintenance operation. And I'm happy that we have turned the corner slightly and we're heading in that direction. It's not 100% yet, but it's between 80% to 85%.
Mm-hmm. But you would have been very surprised, pleasantly surprised at the pitch at the Queen's Park Oval in Trinidad, though.
Well, not surprised. I feel encouraged because I knew for sure the hard work was done.
Mm-hmm.
Manu had time to do those operations, which he did a very good job in doing.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, it was very encouraging to see that we got to that point.
Indeed. So let's turn our attention now to St. Lucia. You're a St. Lucian, and again, it lived up to the billing.
Yes. Although from me, again, me being a St. Lucian, I think I was about 85% and not 95% where, you know, I'd love to be. As I mentioned to you in the previous program, that we were a bit behind in terms of our preparation. Mm-hmm. We were mainly maintenance preparation, but yeah, at least delivered not too bad.
So why were you just 85% happy? I mean, what happened to the remaining 15% in St. Lucia? What happened there?
Yeah. I wanted a little bit more peace. The funk was there, but I just needed some more peace, and that's what I, you know, was looking for.
So next time, how would you get more peace? By planting more grass or what? Tell me.
No. We had a grass cover. We just needed to get our surface.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of grass at our Sunny Stadium. But the roots of the grass is causing a little problem in terms of the amount of organic in the soil.
I see.
So we needed to strip off, about 2.5 inches on top and relay so that we can get that pure soil back in.
And let's turn our attention now to Barbados. Were you happy with the pitch in Barbados at the region's Mecca?
Barbados, Barbados was good. A few little areas that we can improve on, but I'm quite happy as to where we are at this point compared to previous games.
What are those areas that you want to improve on in Barbados?
Just some fine tuning in terms of the surface itself.
Right.
I think it was a little bit uneven in some areas.
Mm-hmm.
So like the top dressing of the soil of the pitch when you lean on the soil to level it out, that could have done, you know, maybe a little bit better. And that would have caused the more even pitch and bombs out of the strip.
Did Barbados start the preparations for the test match in terms of the pitch too late?
I wouldn't say so. According to what I know, no, they didn't start too late.
And what about Antigua? You bowled on the side for 43.
Antigua surprised me a bit. Again, the groundsmen around the region have been trying their best to get that grass in. The grass actually helps the pitch, keeps it together, you know, better.
Mm-hmm.
And you could even do more rolling with grass on without really affecting the soil to an extent.
I see.
So that worked well.
And finally, Jamaica, you're there at Sabina Park now. You just put the covers in the square with all this grass. You're looking for another pitch that would support our bowlers in this test match?
I am really, really looking for Yes, Andrew. I'm really, really looking forward to it. As I said, it's one of the better tracks I've seen at Sabina Park.
Mm-hmm.
and I'm really looking forward to see, you know, the football on Tuesday morning.
Indeed. And before I go, just tell us exactly, what is your role? You're the creative of the West Indies, Cricket West Indies. I mean, is this a, what, 1 or 2 year contract, or you just do it, series by series?
Well, it's a 2 year contract. But what my main role is, Andrew, is to ensure that we develop that culture in the region to change from what it was before. We need to have grasp on. We need to know how to take up the grass, mm-hmm. and to have it at the right fit for preparation and do the hard maintenance operations in order for us to prepare better wicket.
Mr. Crafter, would it be right to therefore say that you're a consultant?
Mm.
That's another word that can be used, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I like that one. Well, Ken, we're going to let you go because I know that you love Jamaica. And of course, you've told me this before. And let's hope that things could even be better when the West Indies win the Test match.
Okay, Andrew, I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Thanks very much indeed. Ken Crafton, of course, who is the creator of St. Lucian. And has got a big job there with the West Indies. Dr. Forty said it's a 2 year contract. I'm sure he's been paid very well, and we wish him well. Okay, let's pause for business calls. When we come back, we'll take your calls. 4341790.
Back up your non winning tickets or top up receipts totaling $50 or more and drop into entry boxes at Barbados Lottery Agents Island wide. For details, visit your nearest Barbados Lottery agent or check My Barbados Lottery Facebook and Instagram page.
All right, you can call us at 4341790. 4341790. Of course, you're calling outside of Barbados. It's 1246 and participate in the show. Interesting comments there, Dr. Cummins from Ken Crafton.
Yeah, definitely. He is trying pretty hard. But I noticed his comments about the Barbados square. And, you know, interestingly, over the years, just from a spectator standpoint, it does sometimes seem as though if you're bowling from the media center end, the ball doesn't bounce as much as if you're bowling from the 3Ws end.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's an interesting observation. I don't know if
Pearson, you want to comment on that?
Well, it depends. I think Kensington, it depends on
which
pitch you're playing on. Yeah, I think the one going closer to the scoreboard seem to be a little more livelier and even.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the one that is not exactly in the center, but there's one there coming toward the center of the square that seems to be very favorable. Most of the players for the Barbados team tend to like to play on that one because it gives a good balance between bat and ball.
Mm.
But I agree with you that I believe that might have been something to do with some of the shows we had. At some point, there was a pitch that had, you know, the stage covering it.
Yeah.
All right, let's take our first call. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guess. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guess. Hello.
Yeah, hello. Hey, I'm inquisitive.
You're inquisitive. Why are you inquisitive, caller? Do you know you're on Mason and Guess?
Right. I know quite true. I know your program.
Okay, let's.
I'm not coming, Mason.
Winston Reed?
Yeah. Mason is part of the ground staff.
Winston Reed.
Yeah.
He's part of the staff at Kensington.
Yeah.
That deals with the grounds and so on, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
Winston Reed?
Yeah.
He was at the Test match.
Yeah.
You were thinking of Winston Reed playing for Barbados?
Man, you don't play for Barbados no more.
Wait, but you... I just asked, because you said you were inquiring about him. So.
He's very much a
I saw him the other day at Kensington Oval. I think he works for Comey.
He works for Comey, yes. But I know he also has a role in terms of the grounds.
This show helps find people and put them back together. And
he's not lost to Barbados.
He's not lost at all.
Philo Wallace?
We hope to link with him. But I want to thank you very much for your contribution and keep listening to Mason and Guess.
Mm.
Interesting call. He's asking for Winston Emerson Reed, our good friend there from Bank Hall in Barbados. 4341790. You can certainly participate in the discussion.
Mr. Mason, I just want to say that I see people passing it over, but something is really concerning me, and it's in terms of Ross and Chase. And I think that
his spin bowling in this next game, if they drop Bishu, might be the only thing saving him a place. I know that he is the rock that some people like to say in that middle order, but his performances, I already thought he would have used that first test as the one to get some runs against his depleted Bangladesh attack in these conditions, but I was disappointed in the mode of dismissal. And I really hope that if he does get the play, that he like sets us down, because I see him playing a lot of loose shots. He's not really looking to settle in, bat long periods of time, and maybe get some runs, but I don't know. I just hope that. And if he does have the ball, he's looking to have some success recently, so hope he can continue with that.
He's not having his best series, but I do think that you know, Chase has shown what he can do already, averaging 34 after 21 tests isn't a very stellar performance, but it's heading in the direction that we would like. But his average would have dropped quite a bit over these four tests. But he has been bowled through the gate a few times, inside edge onto the stumps, and
very
also
far away,
also he was with the ball coming in seems to be causing him difficulties this series.
But you wouldn't drop him though.
No, I wouldn't drop him. I wouldn't.
Okay.
But getting to the spin bowling aspect that was mentioned both by Sir Kirtley and by Pearson, just looking at his bowling in the 21 tests, 35 wickets at 46 with a strike rate of 81.5. And I know that Pearson may have been wondering if Bishu was better than that.
Not really.
Okay, well.
He should be.
Yes, he is better.
His
strike rate is 68.
68.6. He is the special.
And his average is 36.
But Dr. Ford, you know that Hetmyer in that warm-up game, or what the people like to call for Bangladesh, you know, he would have got a beautiful 100.
Yes.
And also, Mr. good friend, Mr. Shamar Brooks, got 100.
Yes. I know that.
India A,
and he's knocked out today.
Yeah, 124.
Does that put him closer now, you think, Dr. Ford, in making the side?
Well, the last match he did get 91, but Ambrose got 100 the last match at around 44. Even though Ambrose didn't score in this innings, but the West Indies A, 301 for 9 in 90 overs against.
We saw the Ambrose Chronicles, Dr. Ford. I don't know if you're willing to go back there.
I'm sure he's working on that deficiency.
I think in Shamar's case, I think for some reason he has to do a lot more than others, because Chairman of Selector Brown indicated that the criteria, there are two that he was looking at in terms of batsmen: consistency in terms of over a period of time, and he was looking at average. And Brooks has had three seasons where his average has. The average for Brooks, I think, the season before was 48.75. I think this season was over 50, and the one before it was in the mid-40s. Now, he's the only Millard batsman, if you're taking out Shea, who doesn't really play for Barbados for a whole season, in the Caribbean, who has done that. But for some reason, and I think I know the reason.
But why is that?
I believe that Brooks playing for the West Indies would make a 70 and a 20, whereas another player would make 100 and 3. 101 is a tree. So there, you will tend to look at the one who goes on to make the 100, right? But he needs to convert. He has a lot of 50s, and it needs to convert those 50s.
Would you pick him, Mr. Bivell? Would you pick him if you're...
Well, I like balanced players, and I will say this. In Barbados, the Barbados batsman, this is my short persons, who I believe has the best balance, who plays for the Barbados team, is Kenroy Williams. Right, he has the best balance at the crease.
I'm saying
that in terms of batting, right? Shamar Brooks has the best balance of all the batsmen that I see playing around the region. The region, he has good balance.
Well, he has made 100 this time, which will help.
I think that would help.
I think the question we have to ask is why not so much as Shamar Brooks, but why, you know, other young players can get to a 50 and can't convert to the 100. I mean, we've seen Smith do that,
and Kieran Powell is ready.
Oh, Powell does it.
Yes, I mean, he looked
so
fantastic.
Best to watch.
Elegant. And then he just
always gets a start, and it's frustrating because he looks that he can do it. Get those hundreds, double hundreds.
But the former Barbados West Indies player Carly Best, some time ago when he was analyzing cricket on the radio, thought that one of the reasons that players got to 50s and they got it was because they. As soon as they got that 50, they were thinking of 100, and they changed what they were doing to reach the 50. Mm. And he reckoned that in his career, he never changed.
So he shouldn't tell them
that. In other words, once he reached that 50 by doing A, B, or C, he continued. Yeah. And people think, and it's a psychological thing, you know, you're thinking of the next landmark. Mm. So that could be one of the reasons that you're seeing a lot of young players get into 50s so easily, and then it's very hard to convert those 50s into centuries.
All right, gentlemen. Well, we're going to continue to go around the Caribbean. We want to say hello to all of the listeners, to Mason and guests. Let's go to the land of Calypso and talk to a carnival man, Fazeer Mohammed. Hello, Fazeer. How are you?
Yes, indeed. You've disrupted my carnival festivities, but it's always a pleasure to be on the show.
All right. Good, good, good. Well, first of all, I heard a story this afternoon that your president has been asked, and the committee, they've been asked to resign in Trinidad, the Trinidad board. What's going on there?
Well, there continues to be a situation regarding accountability. What has happened is that an organization, a company, a government, a state-owned organization, the NGC, the National Gas Company, they have been one of the main sponsors of the Trinidad and Tobago Cricket Board. And indeed, in the last sponsorship period, I think from 2014 to the present time, an audited statement from the NGC has claimed that 24% of the funding, which amounts to several million dollars, has been allocated inappropriately. Now, that has prompted quite a bit of comment, including from Darren Ganga, and you all would be aware of Darren Ganga's situation as far as challenging the present executive together with Dinanath Ramnarayan. They have a matter in court related to the structure of the board and the elections structure, which has delayed the election from last year. But getting back to the issue that we're talking about right now, following that statement, following the statement from Darren Ganga, from his solicitors, calling for some level of accountability, as ambassador, the president of the Trinidad and Tobago Cricket Board made a statement last week refuting those allegations. That was followed by a response from the NGC confirming the authenticity of their information. So you now have a situation where the Trinidad and Tobago Cricket Board, the executive, and especially the president as ambassador, they've got their backs to the wall because they are facing mounting criticism in relation to the accountability for funds and indeed from the NGC. And of course, you've got the situation of a delayed election. You've got the situation of a governance report that was commissioned by the Cricket Board that is not being implemented, that has yet to be implemented. So there are a number of issues piling onto each other against the present executive.
Well, this is serious. Dr. Ford is a former president of an association that must concern you.
Well, certainly, discord in any organization is never a good thing. But do you see any solution, any way forward? Because if you can't get elections, then you're stuck because there's no way of changing the executive or getting anything done unless you can get it through the courts to get some action, which is always a protracted process. So, Fazeer, what do you think is the best way forward for the Trinidadian cricket?
I would think that the best way forward would be for people to step back and recognize how much this entire imbroglio is damaging the game, damaging, one, the image of the game, and damaging the entire perspective on cricket. But in the same way, we have the situation with Cricket West Indies and the many governance reports and so on. You don't get the sense that there are enough people willing to step back and look at the situation. And as you said quite correctly, it's probably going to go to the courts, which means that nothing is going to get done. It's going to be mired in the courts. The lawyers are going to make a lot of money from it all. And we'll all be arguing about the same issues in 12 months' time.
Do you think Azim Basrat will survive?
I suspect that he may survive because, again, at the end of the day, it comes down to support. In the same way that we have a situation at Cricket West Indies level where Dave Cameron, to his credit, has proven himself to be a very skilled administrator and negotiator, because everyone up and down the region might have been cussing Dave Cameron left, right and centre over the last couple of years, yet the last time around, he was elected unopposed. Some of the same territories that were vehemently against him and his management style and everything associated with his leadership, they rallied behind him. So you've got a situation that is almost a microcosm of that right here in Trinidad and Tobago, where you have almost polar opposites in the battle for the governance of cricket. But at the end of the day, it's about getting people on your side. And if people are willing to make promises to key voters and key electors in the process, then you'll be re-elected again. So it's never a matter in Trinidad and Tobago of performance, integrity, and all of these factors, which you think should be the barometers by which you actually measure success or failure. It's ultimately about who you know and who knows you.
So based on numbers, then, you think Azim will survive?
Well, at the moment, there's no challenge because there's no election. That essentially, until you have an election, until you have some semblance of election somewhere down the road, he remains president of the Trinidad and Tobago Cricket Board.
Is there anyone possible that would challenge him for the position?
Well, obviously, it's going to be Dinanath Ramnarine, because Ramnarine and Ganga were at the helm of the team that challenged him a couple of years ago. They lost out. They claimed, again, it was an abusive process, and that's why they challenged the constitutionality of the situation where outgoing executives actually vote themselves back in, which is how it's always been for many, many years, from the days of Aloy Leekwai and company and Derek Murray and so on. And now you've got Azim Batra at the helm. So it's a situation that has come to a head. And as I said, at this point, it appears that Dinanath Ramnarine, whether he chooses to continue to challenge, but he appears to be the one leading the charge in opposition to Azim Batra and his executive.
Good evening, Fazer. You had mentioned the sponsors or an entity that would have put financial assistance toward the Trinidad board. Does all of this compromise that input from, say, a private entity who might want to get involved or bring about some sponsorship as far as that is concerned?
Well, I think it's only obvious, because if you really think about it, if any corporate entity in Trinidad and Tobago or outside of Trinidad and Tobago might have been inclined to coming on board with the Trinidad and Tobago Cricket Board as far as sponsorship of programs or particular tournaments or to be identified with the board or with the national teams, they'd be looking at this situation, because the NGC, it's a major organization, because you have to recall that in Trinidad and Tobago, we still rely heavily on oil and natural gas to drive our economy. So if you're talking about the NGC, you're talking about the National Gas Company of Trinidad and Tobago, which really pumps hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue into the economy of Trinidad and Tobago. And indeed, to be putting millions of dollars into the Trinidad and Tobago Cricket Board at this stage of our economy, which is in decline at this point, represents a significant contribution. So for them to have stated in their audit that 24% of the funds, based on their information from their auditors, has been misallocated, then that obviously raises questions as for any other entity that may wish to support the Trinidad and Tobago Cricket Board.
Misallocated, because there's some serious words.
I'm sure the executive would have overseen the allocation of the funds. It's unlikely that one individual could, control the purse strings of such a significant
unlikely
organization.
Why would you say that? Unlikely.
Well, decisions are made by an executive, and if you have a secretary, there's usually more than one signature needed for a check. Right. So I mean, in an organization, you can't funds misallocation may mean that it was not used for what
the intended purpose.
It was intended, or what it was given for. But all these decisions are made by an executive. So the question is, did the executive function, or did someone do it on their own?
My main thing with things like that would be, once they follow the financial rules of the organization, that would be my, once you follow the financial rules, you can understand misallocation in terms of diverting of funds from one head in terms of your budget to the other. But I don't perceive that there may be a big issue in that regard. I think what would be of concern is corporate entities trying to get on board and having that brand attached to the organization. They would not want to be tainted.
And you said, Percy, you don't see that as a big issue?
No, I never said that.
Misallocation?
Misallocation.
I think it's a very big issue. And Fazer, I think, alluded to it too.
Yeah, it's an issue. I mean, if you have $10 million earmarked for a cricketing program for under 13s,
right,
and you use $8 million, and then there was an urgent need for monies to do something like to buy covers.
Right.
For argument's sake, you may want to move that from that head because it's budgeted for that financial year.
Right.
But what I'm saying, once you follow the financial rules,
right,
then you're on good grounds. If you don't follow the rules, then you're asking for trouble. Yeah.
Fazir, you're still with us, huh? Fazir?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Now, we spoke about, of course, as in Basra, and then you talked about Dinaraf Ramnarayan possibly running for the position as president of the board. Do you think that he's popular enough? Do you think he's got the kind of support, despite the challenges that Azim has, that he could possibly win? Because I understand he's not as popular.
There continue to be mixed reviews, Andrew, about Dinanath Ramnarayan.
Right.
Because, in fact, just about a couple of weeks ago, he was fired as the chairman of the sport company of Trinidad and Tobago. And again, depending on who you talk to, there'll be different views about Dinanath Ramnarayan in that role, that he was uncovering things as far as probably whether it's, we're talking about corruption or misappropriation of funds or poor spending patterns that ruffled the wrong people and therefore he had to be gotten rid of, or the other perspective that he's too much of an abrasive personality, wants to have things his own way. It really depends on any given day when you're walking down the street, Frederick Street in Port of Spain. It depends on who you talk to as far as a view on Dinanath Ramnarayan, because he does evoke strong views one way or the other. You hardly find someone saying, well, I really don't care one way or the other. It's either you're on board with his perspective and the way he's done things, either at the helm of the West Indies Players Association or in various capacities in sport in Trinidad and Tobago, or exactly the opposite, that you're totally against his way of doing things, his confrontational manner, and all of these things that are the package that is in and out Ramnarayan. So it's essentially six to one, half a dozen of the other when it comes to him.
Who are the seasoned and level-headed and calm administrators that exist within the Trinidad cricket fraternity?
Well, I suppose the seasoned, level-headed and calm usually are the ones left in the background, because Trinidad is an environment much like the Carnival Masquerade, where you have to make as much noise and get as much attention as possible to be able to prevail.
Wow.
It's not unlike the political scene in any part of the Caribbean or the world, for that matter. And you'd usually find that the hard-working administrators in the background, eventually, they are the ones who are the most frustrated individuals, because they do all the hard work, and then at the end of the day, they sometimes get the short end of the stick. For the inappropriate behavior of different individuals at different levels. But there are good people around in sport, not just cricket, but in different levels of administration. The problem is that sometimes, because of governance, for example, things get so convoluted, so chaotic. We have a situation right now in table tennis where our best player, a man by the name of Dexter St. Louis, who has been a national champion, a Caribbean champion on many, many occasions, has actually not been selected for our national team. He's challenged it in arbitration. He's won out in arbitration yesterday, and now the Table Tennis Association has been mandated to have a selection process all over again. But there's still no guarantee that they'll pick Dexter St. Louis again, which again talks about the polarization of views on so many issues. And that's why I made the point that we often argue about a lot of different things about process and procedure, and the right way of doing things, and dotting the I's and crossing the T's, and don't step back and see what is happening to the respective sport.
Now, Fazir, let's now turn our attention, of course, to the test match. The West Indies, a refreshing win in Antigua. Now they go up to Sabina Park. You expect them to win both test matches, Fazir?
Very easily, too. I was surprised that they took as long as a third morning to win that first test match, because, quite frankly, Bangladesh are completely inept when there's a bit of peace that comes. And we saw that in Antigua. Did you even talk about Antigua with a bit of grass? If there's grass left on the pitch in Jamaica, well, this should be a two-day affair if the West Indies are really inclined to make it a two-day test match. But take nothing away from the Bangladeshis. Their cricket has developed over the years, and they've been very competitive at home. But like the West Indies, over the years, on the flat, bland pitches that have stretched matches out year after year and produced some rather tedious and turgid and, quite frankly, boring international cricket in the Caribbean, now you have the exact reverse of sporting services, and the Bangladeshis don't have a clue.
Okay. Now, we learned today that Kemar Roach has been ordered to rest because he has a hamstring problem. And they brought in Azhari Joseph Is that a fair move, you think?
I think it is because he got four wickets in the warm-up match against Bangladesh. Whether he'll be in the final 11 or not, that's another issue. I think Kimo Paul should be at the head of the queue to get a place in the final 11 because he's a good young cricketer. He's been in the squad. He's shown his worth in the one days in the qualifying tournament in Zimbabwe. We've talked about that already. And I really think that not because it's Bangladesh who struggled so badly in the previous test match, but because Kimo Paul is, from my own perspective, the next person in line. Now, Zari Joseph is still feeling his way back into full fitness at international level. Mm-hmm. Maybe the thinking will be he could really rough up the Bangladeshis even more with his height and his bounce at Sabina Park. But I would think that given the progress that he's made from youth level to senior level, I think Kimo Paul is deserving of a test debut come Thursday.
Now, let's turn our attention before you go, Fazer, to a recent development. The whole question of T20 cricket is all over the world. In fact, you played T20 cricket all over the world. But there's some attempt now to limit the number of tournaments around the world. Now, I mean, it's all over. Do you agree with the suggestion that you should only have just three outside the main ones?
Well, it sounds as a good idea, but I would like to see any administration successfully implementing that sort of policy because, one, you're going to face restraint of trade issues with players. How do you tell players who may have issues, like in our situation right here in the West Indies, who have various issues with the regional administration, to say, well, okay, you are only allowed to play three tournaments in any given year? Mm. It sounds like a good idea, but as per usual, the ICC is very slow in responding to different situations. So in a situation like this, it comes across as if the ICC are just trying to control, to essentially bolt the stable door when the horse is not only coming into the home stretch, is running another race somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I mean, the idea of restraining players at this stage, it can only work if you have proper consultation with players. And from our own example right here in the Caribbean, you don't get the sense that there's been that level of dialogue with the players, with the international organization, FICA, to come up with what could be seen maybe as an uneasy compromise or any sort of compromise. So for the ICC to either dictate what terms are going to be as far as how many T20 tournaments you can play, I don't see that working at all.
You don't see it working well. In fact, as you know, the news broke last week, ICC to limit players to three T20 leagues a year.
Question mark.
Okay, interesting.
T20 home and another. I think that has really to do with international cricketers who are representing the country in one or two formats. I think there are enough other cricketers out there that have enough time and aren't as constrained by their national requirements.
And then when you look at that, you think, okay, let's look at the obvious three that people pick. IPL is one, yes. Big Bash is the second, and then
Their home.
Right, exactly. So then it will put a lot of the other leagues out of, the
in
flashy.
Trouble?
Yeah,
CPL
I think
could
so.
Be in trouble?
I think so, for
Fazer,
sure.
CPL could be in trouble?
Well, the situation is, as you just pointed out, everyone wants to play where the big money is, that's IPL and BBL. So that just leaves the CPL with the PSL and so many other tournaments. You've got the Global T20 that is on in Canada right now. Hardly anyone is watching.
Some watch. I'm watching, Mr. Mohammed. I'm watching.
But you watch everything.
In the stand. Well, obviously, you're from Barbados. You watch everything.
He's a fanatic.
The fact is that it's sort of like cricket in the Caribbean. Mm. You may not have anyone in the stands, but there's enough of a television audience worldwide and Caribbean-wide to keep it going. So you do have, and you're having a tournament in Abu Dhabi that's going to be in October for just a few days. You're going to have T10 cricket coming up. It's been played in the UAE in December right after
cricket.
The Bangladesh tournament.
Right.
You're going to have shorter and shorter formats, more and more money, and more players. For example, we've had AB de Villiers having retired from international cricket, indicating now that he's going to play IPL for a few more years. So this is the reality, and it's naive to think that you can just simply issue a decree from on high, and players will simply say, oh, you are the great governor of the game, and we're going to listen to you. It doesn't work that way.
So you're saying, Fazer, essentially, well, I mean, you don't think the ICC will get through with this one? legally.
They will get through with it if they can come up with a workable formula with the players and their international representatives. Some sort of formula that will allow for players to be available for their countries and that international cricket will continue to survive and thrive and even prosper in the present environment. Because right now, Test cricket is in serious trouble, where you can have a situation where essentially it's only when India and the West Indies and England play in the Caribbean that Test cricket makes any money. That's two teams out of a possible 12. And that can be copied in almost every other territory of the cricketing world, except, of course, India, Australia, where they have, and England, where they have stronger markets. Test cricket is in serious trouble. One-day cricket, likewise, except for the World Cup, there isn't that huge interest anymore. So you've got to find a formula where, and that involves negotiation, it involves dialogue. It can't be that you just simply issue a decree from on high, and those who actually make the money for you, the players, are just going to happily accept it.
Do you think that if they do go with that Test Championship for next year, you think that will sort of reiterate some interest into Test cricket?
I don't think it will, because I think what will reinvigorate interest in Test cricket is competitiveness. Because at the end of the day, if you recall, when before the growth of all these additional teams, there were just six teams in Test cricket. Not saying that we should go back to six teams, but almost every series, West Indies, England, Australia, India, Pakistan, New Zealand, South Africa came on board, then Sri Lanka. Almost every series in that time, there was no World Championship, there was no official points rankings, nothing. But almost every single Test series had interest because it was competitive. At the end of the day, the cricket was competitive, or teams, as in the case of the West Indies, were so outstanding that everywhere the West Indies went, they were followed by huge hordes of fans just to see them play. Now you've got a situation where the cricket just isn't competitive. It's all well and good for the West Indies to thrash Bangladesh in 2 days in a session, but how does that help Test cricket? Can we say that the World Championship of Test cricket, is it really going to be competitive, or will it merely reinforce the three top Test nations and the rest left trailing behind?
I'm going to shift a little bit to commentary. The quality of Tony Kozier is unmistakable. But do you think the ability of Tony Kozier in his heyday to be the main commentator on TV rather than a comments man, when we were in our pomp and as we deteriorated and he'd established himself, do you think that our lowly status in cricket has prevented West Indian commentary men from really playing their part in a way towards on television?
Well, part of that has to do with the present environment. The reality is, and whether we like it or not, this is an environment dominated by former players. Thankfully, in the time when Tony came in to television commentary, there was still a place for someone like him, like a Jonathan Agnew, like a Henry Blofeld. There were many who were actual journalists who might have had a bit of background in the game, but were full-fledged professional broadcasters who had a place in the game. Now, that is almost a rarity. It's an environment dominated almost entirely by former players. And we might argue as to whether or not those former players are saying anything different, offering any enlightening perspectives. From the broadcaster's point of view, that doesn't matter. Because the fans, the viewers, all they want is to know that XYZ former cricketer said so and so. And even if it's absolute rubbish, if someone who's never played the game says something that makes eminent good sense, that doesn't carry any weight, because the question will be asked, how many test matches did he play? So this is the environment that we are in now, where it's about personality, where it's about players talking about, in my day when I did this, that and the other. And it's a situation where it's almost one where the quality broadcaster, the professional broadcaster, is finding it very, very hard to find his or her place in that environment.
But Fazer, thankfully, in football, it hasn't reached that stage yet. But I agree with you. The years of the Alan McGill reasons, the Cozier's and so on, and John Alex, those were the days when you, even if you didn't see the cricket, you visualize it. And, I mean, even as World Cup is being undertaken now, I personally don't listen to commentators unless Peter Drury is commentating the game. You know, I watch the football, but I tune out what I'm hearing. But if Peter Drury is commentating, then I tune in. And I can see a lot happening in the Caribbean. I think Dr. Ford raised that too, because when a lot of people have been complaining with the standard of commentary you get in terms of the first-class competition in the Caribbean now. And I'm really hopeful that there will be the re-energizing of these things called commentators workshops and so on, so that people like yourself and Andrew Mason and the others can, you know, give some input to the young upcoming commentators, so that the quality that we are accustomed to, we will try to get back to those days.
But just
give me some advice.
Just in response to that observation, if you would allow me, the fact of the matter is that you've actually got to have opportunities to develop your skills as a commentator. And as we're seeing now, radio commentary of cricket, of international cricket, it's almost non-existent. We have a situation where, and Andrew will correct me if I'm wrong, that there was no radio commentary of the test match that was just played in Antigua. But I had a situation where we were in Guyana for a couple of one-day internationals, and you think Guyana, together with Barbados, would be the hotbed of the game at the very least, and there was no radio commentary. So you've got a situation where more and more all of the revenue is drifting towards television commentary, and it's drifting towards television commentary with former players almost exclusively, because that is seen as the medium to attract the fan of the game. Radio commentary, which requires a broadcasting skill, and as you said correctly, the ability of an Arlott or a McGilvery or a Cozier or a Reds Pereira or so many other outstanding voices over the many decades, to paint that picture, give you the context, give you the history, and to really be able to paint that picture for you, which requires that professional broadcasting skill, that is almost being exterminated by the dominance of television coverage. So it's all well and good to talk about workshops and helping commentators along and training them in the skills and the rudiments and the fundamentals of good radio broadcasting. But are they going to get the opportunities in real life to practice those skills?
And talking about broadcasters, we can end on this one. Simon Crosskill up in Jamaica, as you know, I sent you some information recently. He's not well at all, and we wish him well going forward. In fact, he's had several operations recently. He's one of the fine broadcasters across the region, but, you know, he's not been well for a little while. And in fact, I did share that information with you, and I'm sure we wish him well, Simon Crosskill.
Absolutely, Andrew. And could I say that the time when we had CMC Cricket Plus with yourself, myself, and Simon, 1999 and 2000, and we had some outstanding comments personalities as well, that to me was the high point of my career as a broadcaster, because it really put an emphasis with Julius Gittins, the man behind the scenes at CMC. It really put an emphasis on quality radio commentary. And even if there would have still been the disputes and the arguments, because everywhere you go, sometimes you say, well, you know, you young fellas are no good. You know, you're never going to be like Cozier. You're never going to be like Reds and so on. Fine. No problem at all. But just from my own limited experience, that opportunity working together with yourself and Simon and the entire team and being part, and even, of course, Trevor Hollingsworth, our late colleague, as part of that team, that would be the high point of my career. And I certainly echo your sentiments in wishing Simon all the very best. I understand that he's recovering well, but as you said, he's had some serious health challenges over the last few months. And I certainly would like to echo your comments and wish him all the very best.
All right. Fazir Mohamed, out of Trinidad and Tobago, thanks as usual for coming through and talking to us on Mason and Guest. Enjoy the rest of your night.
I intend to. Thanks very much.
All
Take care.
Right. 4341790. Of course, we are on Mason and Guest. We want to say hello to all of the listeners across the region. You can call us and participate in the show. Talking about the West Indies, 301 for 9. West Indies A, of course, to be precise. Campbell, 41. Thomas, 27. Blackwood, 12. Shamar Brooks, 121. Not out. Ambrose, where he didn't score. Singh got, how many? 8. Reefer got 11. Shepherd, 5. Warrican, 5. Lewis, 18. And Thomas, 2. So, Shamar Brooks making a name for himself. Mm. And, you know, they've spoken about him quite a lot. 244 balls, 290 minutes of the crease, 15 fours. And trying to make a push to get in to the West Indies side. And I think people who've seen Shamar Brooks, you know, would recognize he's certainly got some ability, and we wish him well. 4341790, you can call us and participate in the show. This is Mason and Guest.
And Mr. Mason, I'm just not sure if you're aware, but the Cricket West Indies B side is doing very well in that Global T20 League in Canada. They only lost two games, and they're second, and Justin Graves, who, of course, we know would have had a run with Barbados last year. He's doing very well up top. But I think he picked up a little niggle because I haven't seen him featured in the two games that they've lost. But they've looked good. Fabian Allen has got some runs. Kevin Hodge. So it's I found it a good initiative to get some experience because, as we know, T20 cricket is taking over. And especially with our implications that we have with players time after time, it's always good to expose some regional players at that level so that they can be the future of West Indies cricket.
Indeed.
I've watched it, but it hasn't been compelling viewing. There's something that's missing from it.
Missing, Doc?
I don't know. It just seems to be another level of cricket. A lower level of cricket.
A lot of people don't seem to be watching either.
I'm watching.
I watch it.
What are the conditions, though? The outfield seems like a YNPC
need a little bit of work.
Yeah, Spartan. You know,
that's a good start. But what it does show is that some T20 leagues will just not survive.
Yeah.
They will do okay the first year or second, but longevity, some of them will have to will not make it.
The world boss got some runs at last.
Yeah, 60 odd. But Doc, I just want to ask you, what do you think makes the IPL so successful? Is it that it was one of the first ones to come out and everybody gained interest in it?
It's a total production. It's high quality in every facet of the game, from the
total production.
Marketing, the facilities, the players, it's glitzy, even the kits look good.
I feel like CPL is just losing it. I don't know. People say that it's where only the old boys come down to the Caribbean.
Old boys and you.
I think what also makes the IPL successful is the audience. They really cater to a global audience. But even if you didn't have the global audience and you have that population in India, and in terms of marketing, it will produce a tournament like that, which has all the glitz and glamour, and it has the financial aspect of it in terms of the financial reward, the financial input, and they attract. Is that the right time too of the cricketing calendar? You know, right? It tends to sit right there.
And no ready series going on,
and it doesn't seem to impact.
They have a window.
So that makes it.
They control all.
They
the
tell.
Money.
Yeah, they tell every team. You know.
Yeah, that makes it very, very attractive, and. And as I said, I found that the corporate family in India, they really put mega dollars behind that tournament.
They found the way of developing their cricketers at the expense of the entire cricketing world.
That's right.
And everyone has just bought into it, and it's a good plan for supremacy in cricket.
You think that CPL could survive, or you don't really see it?
I think CPL will survive because it has a uniqueness. A unique brand of CPL is in this situation where you have the sea, the coconut tree. The visual impact. Don't discount the visual impact, because you would find that, especially Danny Morrison, isn't it? Yeah, he always marvels at, yes, you have tournaments all over the world, but you have these structures. When you come to the Caribbean, you get to see the background, the backdrop, and so on. And then you have the tourist aspect of it. But it will survive because of that unique quality. The ones that I find that are dwindling will be like in Sri Lanka and
Bangladesh.
Well, there's an exit clause at the end of 7 years, and this is no year six.
I think the UK.
Of course, it's a 50-year contract.
In the UK, they'll be seeing all the matches, and I think that will make a big.
But don't forget that they're 5 hours ahead.
Sky's
brilliant. Yeah, but they're 5 hours ahead. So when we play the game at 8 o'clock at night, our second day doubleheader. They're around 1 o'clock
in the
morning.
It's all about the money for the television.
And that's
viewing,
one of the
really.
Reasons why some of those games were starting in the mid-afternoon.
Yeah.
You know?
But from a Barbados standpoint, I think the Barbadian franchise has been losing some steam and also support.
The team, I don't think the team is very deep this year. If you look at that bowling, I don't know who would have had the chance to look at it. But we lost our captain, Pollard.
He wasn't really contributing the past few years.
Honestly, he doesn't look very good. I've watched him in this Global T20 League for the Toronto Nationals, and really only a few Caribbean players breaking out in that. I see Evan Lewis getting some runs. Andrew Russell, of course, you know, he's a T20 boss.
Yeah.
And
the new boss.
Yeah, well, that's something I like to say, but I know he would be fancy. Every T20 team would look to fancy having him in it. And it's not really very positive from the likes of Gale and Pollard. Mr. Bevel, you think they're finished?
I wouldn't say that they're finished, because the thing with T20 cricket is that...
Or is it that Pollard is on the decline?
The thing is that at 220, I don't know, declining at 220 is a harsh word, because you're talking about 20 overs, and sometimes you only need 4 overs to have a good session, 4 good overs of the batsman, and then you make 30 or 40 runs in a few balls, and then the people say that you're back on the up and up. It's not like the long form cricket where you have to have a substantial score or be at the wicket for a long time. So, that will happen in T20. Is a luxury. I mean, you have to take chances, and you will come out sometimes on top as a batsman. And bowlers sometimes are taken to the cleaners. But it's kind of cricket that, you know, it's there for the spectacle. It's not the purest form in terms of what people would want to see from hard grain of cricket in the longer version. But it's there, and it's what it is, and we have to accept it as part of the cricket in Canada.
Mm. Well, as we spend our last 15 minutes or so on the show, we want to, of course, spend some time, hope to be able to go back to Jamaica, because I want to get a feel. We were trying desperately to talk to Orville Higgins. We had one or two challenges, and I know that we weren't able to speak to Nehemiah Perry. Just to find out what's going on up there in relation to atmosphere, et cetera. I understand that the tickets are not going at all.
And
there's a great deal of interest, of course, in football. Yes.
And in front of every test match, we call and they say, oh, it's a low key and stuff. Why is it like this? You know, people are saying in the Caribbean, oh, we're trying to get test cricket, to where it was before, get that interest going. But why is there no advertising? Or even if, okay, fine, the advertising is too expensive, but what does anybody have any answers for why this seems to be like getting no interest?
I don't think even if you have a advertising blitz, it will bring crowds to cricket. Crowds follow successful persons and teams, and until we get to a stage where we are consistent and we are building a team that can attract crowds once again, and we have quality and star players, we must produce world-class players. If you don't have world-class players in your team, you're not going to get the crowds that we got 20 years ago watching cricket in the Caribbean. And whenever we think that we have a player who would produce that star quality, they seem to hit a bump. I remember we had the Bravo, Young Bravo.
Mm-hmm.
We had Hope. Hope is now kind of leveling off. And we hope that he can get back to, you know, his high standards that he set in England.
Mm. All right. Well, we're going to go up to Jamaica and talk to your favorite person in Jamaica, Dr. Ford, Christine Cummins. Right. Hello, Christine. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Well, you sound loud and clear. We're glad to hear you. Have you gone on to somebody to buy your tickets as yet?
Well, I went to pick up my tickets. I'm now, you know, a retiree, so I get free tickets.
Indeed.
I can finally cash in.
Indeed. Now, talk to me, Christine, about the whole question of atmosphere. I understand tickets are going to hotcakes. Is that true?
No. The truth is, when I went on Monday to pick up my tickets,
mm-hmm.
and the only people I saw there were either older than me or my age.
Mm-hmm.
And they were largely picking up tickets because they're free. And
members,
because it's a nice day out for the old retirees, you know. It's a nice day out for retirees. In fact, I think we need to advertise it more.
Mm.
So test cricket is only for the...
Mm.
For the older group?
Well, apparently. The other thing, of course, is it's a terrible time to have test cricket, particularly when it's not a side of note. You're in the middle of a Football World Cup, which is quite exciting, and you're in the middle of Wimbledon. Yeah.
Quarterfinals tomorrow, so.
So, you know, it's really the time. The truth is the vast majority of people are in football mode. the vast majority.
Well, of course, Orville Higgins was saying that there's no World Cup football on Thursday, so Sabine will be full.
Full of what? Empty seats. Full of empty seats.
But have you heard any promotions at all up there in Jamaica, the radio and television?
Well, yes, you know, I actually must say that I was listening to ARIE FM, and I did hear an advertisement with Curtly Ambrose.
Really?
Telling people, you know, to support cricket.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised. Other than that, I haven't heard anything. The truth is that, you know, I think we've had this discussion before.
Right.
I don't think people realize that having radio or free-to-air commentary is the cheapest way to market the game.
That's interesting.
I mean, I grew up with my grandmother listening to Test cricket, with my father and mother listening to Test cricket. And I learned how to tell them the score.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you see cricket on free to air, you see the children outside playing cricket. Mm-hmm. A lot of communities cannot afford cable. So the reality is, while I can watch cable, the people who we want to play the game are not seeing the game. The people who used to go to the bar and sit down and watch TV or listen on radio, they're not following the game. How are they going to follow the game?
Well, it's interesting you say that, Christine, because I suspect there may not be any ball-by-ball commentary on radio for the test match that starts on Thursday.
Well, if today is Tuesday and you're in Barbados, that already tells me what's going on.
Yeah, it's a serious thing. In fact, I can tell you that a lot of the stations across the Caribbean are not carrying the cricket. I know that at the last minute, in Antigua, ABS did in fact bring some cricket, but I'm not sure that it was heard throughout the region, and that must concern you, I would imagine.
But the only way it's heard when the local stations carry it, and I would fear Antigua and Barbados,
right,
generally carry local cricket.
Right.
As long as you have friends on the internet who can tell you where to find it, you can follow. But if you don't have a computer to follow cricket, or a smartphone that can watch, you know, that can listen to VOB or wherever.
Mm.
How are you going to know what's going on?
Mm-hmm. And
you know what's frightening about this?
Mm-hmm.
We used to get live cricket commentary before we were even independent.
Right. That's true.
I mean, think about it. We used to stay up all night listening to cricket from Australia or wherever. Mm-hmm. Hmm? And now we can't even get radio coverage. These people aren't serious.
Hi.
How you doing?
Not too bad. Nice to hear your voice again.
Thank you.
That's Andrew's fault anyway. Yeah, he kept you away from us. You know, just
be punished.
just to piggyback on what you were saying, you know, we can watch basketball, we can watch the Premier League football, and so on.
You can watch anything.
Anything, yeah. But, you know, you're not able to watch cricket, which...
You want a better joke than that?
Go on.
Right across the island, people were selling flags for the World Cup.
Mm. Oh, so, all the flags.
So one of them, I asked him if he had a West Indies flag for me.
There's the flags for the nations that were participating.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I thought I wanted a West Indies flag, which is a joke. I have mine.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I was just, you know, I said, yeah, have a West Indies flag? He said, well, yes, sir.
So going back to the whole aspect of what? The visual impact of having it free to air and also on the television and radio simultaneously. You know, you're seeing now as I pass in Barbados a lot of young kids playing football in the streets and in the,
of course,
you know, between houses, right? And then the converse of that is having the basketball and other sports so readily visible. You see a lot of guys on the hard courts here, bouncing the balls and so on. And nothing wrong with that, because when we were growing up, we played a lot of sports. We were multi-talented. And some of us played football, basketball, what have you. Now you find that the kids are growing up, they tend to just be in one sport. And because of that, they are not as athletic as, you know, what we used to have years ago in terms of people that are, we produce as sports persons.
the athleticism is not there. It's, and you see it portrayed when you look at the age group team. Some of the under-13s look very awkward and, mm-hmm. you know, playing.
But don't you think that's because generally in the schools, the emphasis on what we used to call extracurriculum
mm-hmm.
is no longer there?
Right.
In other words, they're not getting basic motor skills. They don't have music. They have rhythm.
They're too weak.
They don't have sport. Hmm?
Yeah, I think, but this is not a sexist comment or anything, but there are two reasons for it. One is that you find a lot of the Caribbean men are not gravitating into the tertiary level education as before. The percentage has dwindled. And you had a lot of men in the primary schools who would normally look after and supervise cricket and football and so on.
And, who did it for free?
Yes, but you if you look at the staff now, you see it's skewed towards a heavy female bias. And that has to be so because, as I said, men are not moving on to the tertiary level institutions to become teachers and so on like before. And,
yeah, but you can't just run from that. There is a reason for that. Mm-hmm. If a man can't afford to feed his family on a teacher's salary...
Okay.
He's not going to teach.
Yeah, that's another dynamic.
And Mr. Revelle, sorry to cut you, but I just want to say that I think...
But you're right on that.
Every year people are saying that the Herman Griffith tournament, you know, the primary schools,
is declining.
And I think regionally, so I think greater emphasis to be done at the primary school level in order to...
Dr. Cummins, just to give you an example of what I think...
You know, my name is Christine. I don't
Okay. Just to give you an example of two things that I believe, two situations here in Barbados that we should try to replicate. The Common Mirror School had a teacher for cricket over the last maybe 10 years or so. And you saw the results of that. Where Common Mirror School, they were producing a lot of cricketers and they were favoring into the Barbados team and now into the West Indies team. The Foundation School also has an arrangement that is not exactly like that, but similar. And you're seeing the same thing occurring at the Foundation School, right? And I believe that the Barbados Cricket Association get together here with the Ministry of Education and try to have an accommodation where you can have those situations filtering into the schools so we can have cricket, you know, being propelled in terms of having a master looking after that cricket program.
You're absolutely correct. In fact, the lotteries across the region, the money is supposed to go to sports, culture, and education. So I don't see why we can't use some of the monies from the lottery to pay for these teachers through the same processes you're speaking about.
Yeah.
But I agree with you 100% on that. We have to find a way. If you don't have people learning a sport at an early age, we're doomed.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that nobody is addressing is, you know, some of the embassies help to finance these foreign sports. Which is not to say all sport isn't foreign. But, for example, we had funding for the Basketball Association in Jamaica from the U.S. Embassy.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So that, in a rare sense, we have to see how we can promote our own sport
mm-hmm.
and find creative ways. But at the end of the day, if the kids are not playing, if they are not seeing it, I don't understand why they haven't worked out the marketing costs. You have more people knowing the game, more people following the game, and more people participating mm-hmm. if they could see it and want to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Something is wrong with
us. No. In the interest of time, Christine, we know that the Sandals is back. They were there before. And after, 13 or so years, no Digicel. Does that surprise you?
It's 13 years. I thought the last time Sandals were with us was in 1995.
I'm talking about Digicel. You know, Digicel left us and Sandals is back. Sandals would have been there, I think, back in 1995.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Are you surprised that the Sandals is back and we've lost Digicel?
Well, Digicel lost me long time, but we won't go there. My view, quite frankly, is I'm watching this one. I'm glad that we have a sponsor that is actually a Caribbean sponsor. But I'm as troubled about the details as everyone is. I don't know the details of the sponsorship. But I suspect that their long-term vision must include their hotels in the different Caribbean territories. Mm-hmm. So they probably have a long-term vision
mm-hmm.
in terms of filling their hotels for matches, but also in terms of support. I don't know what the contract is. I haven't seen the details, as I said. But I would imagine that it's going to be more on the lines of a Sanford model, in the sense that even the regional teams will probably have Sanders attached to them.
Mm.
So I think that's a development to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And who will run it? The CWI part, which should be very interesting.
Mm-hmm, indeed. Well, Christine, let's turn our attention now to the test match, the West Indies. We got about 3 or 4 minutes left now on the show. In terms of the test match at Sabina, no doubt looking forward to a West Indies victory.
Well, I think in all fairness, the youngsters deserve some praise for what they did in Antigua. I mean, you beat who you play.
Mm.
And that was a hell of a whipping. So they deserve full credit for that. I'm not sure of the situation with the weather, because I can see rain coming in.
Mm.
From the system that missed all of you.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be having some rain. I think it should start coming in tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how long that will last.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure of the state of the pitch. I didn't have a look. It looks all right. It's pretty kind of dry.
Mm-hmm.
Given what happened in Antigua, West Indies should win. But this is West Indies, and in a sense, you're at the bottom of the rankings because you're not consistent.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing that happened with Sri Lanka, and we were very lucky with Sri Lanka, you know, because I tell you what, if the Sri Lankans hadn't decided not to play that morning and rain didn't come to help us later, it would have been different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that sometimes we play very well, like we did in England. And then it just all falls down after that, so that we need to see the consistency. I think one of the most important areas to praise,
mm-hmm,
are the bowlers, because you don't win matches unless you have good bowlers.
Mm-hmm.
The one that shocked me the most is Shannon Gabriel, because the truth is I never thought he could reach this stage, because he didn't grow up playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really impressed with whoever was working with him, despite the no balls, and those are an issue.
Mm-hmm.
We have an issue here because they're resting Roach. He has a problem.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and they're playing Azari, right?
Right, he's coming to the squad, yes.
Well, I don't know what his state is. I've never really seen him perform. I think he did perform here at Sabina once, you know, but mm-hmm, I'm not sure I was even there.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Well, we got 30 seconds left on the show. Simon Croskill, our good friend, is not doing well. I'm sure that you're up in Jamaica. Let's wish him well, Simon Croskill.
Yeah, Simon is one of our beloveds. He had his surgery, and his daughter says he is recovering.
Okay, good. Wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yes, I am. I'm happy myself.
All right. Well, Christine.
Okay, nice speaking with all of you.
All right, and enjoy the rest of your... And by the way, who are you supporting in football?
Mm.
Who do you want to win? England?
No, sir. I'm going with France. I've been with France.
But somebody told me... Somebody told me you like England.
Who told you that? you know the name of the book that influenced a lot of my work? By a guy named Mike Marcus. It was called Anyone But England.
We're back in the red boys. Reggae boys.
No, I have to remember the Windrush. I can't support a team that treat our old people there. Sorry.
the doctor, before you want to say a special good evening to Christine?
Well, it's good hearing you. So I hope Andrew will link up with you again. Get some perspectives
on this stuff. Okay, when I
get
together,
they
will get. Yeah. And support England. Thanks to you, Christine.
Okay.
Well, there's a guy in the studio, Ronnie Clark, who supported
England. Asian bandwagon, Mr. Mason. Everybody's jumping on France and England.
He's from there, right?
Yeah, I know, not Mr. Clark, of course, but...
All right. Well, Christine, thanks for coming through and talking to us. We were not able to make 1 or 2 connections in Jamaica. We were... we didn't get through to Orville, and we were supposed to speak to Nikita, but these things happen. Of course, we will want to talk to these people a little bit later on. Well, we hope you enjoyed our show half as much as we enjoyed presenting to you. The West Indies are in battle against Bangladesh. Of course, that starts on Thursday. We wish them well. I'm Andrew Mason. Here's hoping for a brighter tomorrow. It's good night.